Hello and welcome to the Ice Guys. This is the show that takes you into the world of the National Hockey League. Every game, every day, from a betting perspective. With pro sports handicappers, Ian Cameron, Alex P. Smith, and various guests from the world of hockey and sports betting. And now, here's your host, Ian Cameron.
Welcome to the Ice Guys, presented by Boston Hemp, Inc., Wednesday, May 29th. Ian Cameron and Alex B. Smith, as we get you ready for Game 4 in the NHL Western Conference Final tonight, the Dallas Stars and Edmonton Oilers, Dallas with a 2-1 series lead, and very much like last night, a pivotal swing game in the series. You're either 3-1 Dallas or 2-2, and it's a best of three going back to the state of Texas. So a big Game 4 tonight in the West, looking forward to it, and of course, right along with that big game tonight is another big bet cast tonight. We are looking forward to it. This could very well be our final conference finals round bet cast as well. So, again, we're going to have to wait and see how these series go. There is a potential that if one of these series gets to game seven, we might get in there with a game seven bet cast next week. But, again, that's still to be determined. We can only go with, where the series are at this point in time. And, again, tonight we do have Game 4 in the West between the Stars and the Oilers. And again, this betcast, by the way, is free. Okay, this one is going to be available to everybody, free for all, open to the public. So again, this is one of those where if you want to join us, all you have to do is DM or email me or Alex for a spot on the betcast tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Note the start time. It is 8:30 p.m. Eastern time because that is when Game 4 gets underway. So again, if you want to join us on this betcast, DM or email me or Alex for a spot. We will send you the link for it before it begins. Game 4, Dallas-Edmonton betcast tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Looking forward to it. And shout out to everyone that joined us last night on the Patreon exclusive betcast. A nice, quaint, crowd, which we like. It's, smaller crowd, easier to chit-chat, I guess, that way when there's not as many people. And Matt Greenfield, special thanks to him for joining us. Sheffield Steelers goaltender in the British League, had a great season there. He joined us for a bit, and I know he ended up being very happy seeing his Florida Panthers pull one out and win in overtime last night against the New York Rangers. Carbon copy of Game 3 for a large part of it, especially the second period and beyond, where Florida was taking it to the Rangers. They were, and it was just a question of, would they actually get a victory? Would they actually get rewarded for their efforts this time? And last night they did. The Rangers, kind of, again, got it getting hemmed in. Florida was kind of relentless as far as attacking them in waves. The Rangers, they've been opportunistic because just when you think Florida down 1-0 after the first period, the way they responded in the second was tremendous. Definitely played like a team. It kind of felt we had to win that game last night to tie the series. It was a great second period from them. They get the two goals. Rangers end up responding and tying the game, obviously, 2-2 in the third period with Alexis Lafreniere's goal. But Florida didn't get deterred. They kept sticking with it, kept peppering Igor Shesterkin, hoping that eventually at some point, the puck would go in for them. And then sure enough, they draw a very early power play in overtime last night. The third straight overtime game, by the way, in the series, significant to some, especially Alex B. Smith, who had three or more overtime games in the series at plus 750 as the dream season in the NHL continues for Alex with that. A great bet there. Again, we see the game go to overtime. It was a great chance that the Panthers had, but there was obviously the hook by Blake Wheeler. There's a lot of Rangers fans that are wondering why Blake Wheeler was out that early in overtime, but nevertheless, it's too late now. He takes that penalty, and the Panthers did not waste any time responding to that, as obviously Sam Reinhart gets the overtime winner. Beautiful puck movement by Florida on that power play, leading to that game-winning goal, by the way. They moved the puck so quickly that it just did not give the New York Rangers penalty kill time to make a move. And the puck was just moving quicker than the penalty killers of the Rangers could react to. Terrific puck movement and passing, and then a great finish. That's the way you're going to beat Igor Shesterkin right now. It's not going to be a shot into the pads. It's not going to be along the ice. It's going to be a roof job, top corner type of shot. And it was a perfect shot in the slot from Sammy Reinhart for the Panthers to win that game, tie the series, and send it back to Madison Square Garden for game five on Thursday night for a best of three situation. Alex and I were big fans of that Florida win because it basically locks up profit for us with our betting approach before the series started, with the Rangers and the Panthers betting them both to win either 4-2 or 4-3. And any kind of win there is going to guarantee us profit because of the way the prices are. And the same thing with the 6-7 game series props, which we both bet as well. We've locked in profit. One of those is now going to cash with this game now, with this series now going at least 6 games minimum. So having said all that, Alex, no complaints about how game four transpired.
No, not at all. I mean, we were able to cash some live wages as well. Didn't hit it the first period over, but not a problem. We always say that usually when there's chances and you have one goal, or you have a goal that ends up being disallowed, or a goal, we had a couple goals that hit off the post in that first late, that's when you start looking at that second period, because the pace was still there to start the second. And like I said, Florida, you know, taking control and dominating, but getting things going on their terms. But at the same time, like I said, you know, this is a Rangers team. It's hard to put them away. And Florida's realizing that now. So it was imperative for them to get this win and now make this a best of three series, heading back to Manhattan for game five. And now this is the point where, you know, like I said, you got to steal games. If you're Igor Shesterkin, if you're Sergei Bobrovsky, you got to have three of your absolute best games of the season, of the postseason, right here, starting with game five. There's some guys that have been pretty absent for both teams that are key players. Mika Zibanejad, the guy who's just been kind of nowhere to found. Chris Kreider at times been a bit absent. Those guys will have to step up for the Rangers if they want to take the 3-2 lead. And for Florida, like I said, you know, seeing the, you know, Bennett and Reinhart and company, those top guys got to get rolling. We've seen a lot of the depth players. We've seen the Gustav Forslings get the odd goals. We saw some good chances last night. You had Stephen Lawrence as one of the the goal scorers you had circled. He had an excellent chance that he just missed on. Evan Rodriguez, who we both like, had a couple of great chances he missed on. So those guys, those chances will have to find ways to break through. And it's not going to be easy because, like I said, these goalies are going to get better and better as the series go on. And I think now the run of the first period over is, I won't be on first period over in game five. I can tell you that now. That run might come to a complete halt at this point. Now, I wouldn't be looking at anything over, because this has already been such a tight series. The fact that we even had an explosion in game three and we were able to cash the first period over in game two, now we're probably going to see much of what we saw out of the third period of some of these overtime games and heading into OT. We're probably going to see that kind of pace even start game five and then game six. So I think we're going to be more in the traditional sense of playoff-style hockey, and it's something we have to kind of adjust all together, especially looking at player props, especially looking at, just full game spots, sides, and totals. And I have no reason to take a full, side at this point anymore, obviously, with us being in the clear with the 6-game, 7-game stack. But now with totals being dicey, too, it's like, the hell am I going to bet in game five and game six when you look at it? Because it just seems like it might be such a tightly contested game that we maybe only be talking about 2 or 3 goal scorers in the whole contest. So that's going to make our job a little bit harder. But like I said, at least we got the biggest part out of the way, which is now this series goes to 5, goes to 6, and we secured some profit either way that this series rolls out.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be 2-1, 3-2 hockey the rest of the series. It just does. And, that's breaks our heart to say that, because we like goals and we like our overs. There's no doubt. And that's primarily the way we've bet totals. But I'm right there with Alex as far as game five and beyond in this series. It's going to be very difficult for me to have a ton of confidence with betting over in this series the rest of the way. Game three was the game to do it. That was a clear spot where I thought it made sense. We're going to get one game at least in this series where the scoreboard kind of explodes a little bit. And that was the game. For various reasons, it was a day game. It was the early start, a lot more sloppy play, turning around from an overtime game and a night game on Friday to an afternoon game on Sunday. It's just all those factors, the lot of ice time that the defense played, it added up and it led to a situation where it was just a great over spot. But now I think with the series going on, and Bobrovsky really got a lot of his confidence back, I thought he played well, because it seemed like even though Florida was getting, 5 times the chances the Rangers were, every Ranger chance that they did get was a pretty good chance. Bobrovsky had to make some pretty good saves last night, so I thought it was definitely a step up There's no doubt, you know, kind of a tough beat for us with Rodriguez because, you know, he had a bunch of chances again last night in that game. And how about, you know, one of the things that occurred during the game last night, and, you know, I said it on the BetCast, when, especially when our Matt was on, Matt Greenfield at the time, about how Matthew Tkachuk can get under your skin and just drive you nuts, and you want to retaliate in some fashion, you know, against him when he's acting like that, and he's getting in your face, and he's slashing you after the whistle, and he's got that stank glove in your face, you know, and face washing you like that, and he just gets under your skin. He chirps you all the time, all that shit. You want to find a way to strike back. And I said it right before, and I said it last night on the BetCast, and I've said it multiple times the last few weeks. If I were him, knowing that he chews that mouth guard nonstop, incessantly, all game long, he's chewing on that thing like a dog chews on a chew toy. You know, he chews on that mouth guard constantly during the whistles, on the bench, even when the play is going on. If you'll watch closely, if they zoom up on him closely while, you know, he's in a battle along the boards while the play is live, the mouth guard is still hanging out of his fucking mouth and he's chewing on it. Like it's like constant. It literally is constant with Matthew Tkachuk. So on the BetCast last night, I end up mentioning what I mentioned before. If I were an opponent and Matthew Tkachuk really pissed me off enough, and he, of course, he'd be chewing that mouth guard the whole time in the middle of the scrum, like always, I'd grab the thing and I'd rip it out of his fucking mouth and I'd throw it in the crowd. I'd chuck it into the crowd and I'd say, go get it, you motherfucker. You know, how do you go get it now? How do you like your mouth guard now? Go get a new one if you can't find it. You know, that's basically what I would say. And this is how it transpired last night on the BetCast. And wouldn't you fucking know it, during the game, third period it was, early on, we actually saw this play out. And someone actually listened to me and heeded my advice. And that person would be Chris Kreider last night during game four, saying, enough's enough. You know, this guy's pissed me off. He's gotten under my skin. I've had it. Just rip that mouth guard away and then throw it away and let him try to find it. I thought it was just absolutely freaking priceless. Here it was, and I know Alex put this little clip together. We're not just good making picks sometimes on this show and picking bets. Sometimes we're good with making picks of what might happen and foreshadowing in the future. But indeed happened, and this was on the BetCast last night on our Patreon exclusive BetCast talking about it. Here it is. Into the crowd. If I ever got pissed off with Tkachuk, no one's done this yet, but I'd be aware of that. I'd probably still watch enough hockey when I'm not playing to know he does that. He just got the thing chewing on it like a dog that chews on his toy. You know, he does it all fucking. He's doing it when he's skating, Matt. He's out there for a shift, and he's still got the thing hanging out of his mouth, chewing on it. If I ever got so mad with him in a scrum and he's like slashing at me or whatever, I'd rip the thing right out of his mouth and tuck it into the crowd and say, go get the thing, motherfucker. Yeah. Yeah, the crowd's still going. Oh, man, isn't that a something or what? It happened, man. It happened. But I thought eventually someone's going to snap, and that's what they're going to do. It's like, to me, the obvious thing to really piss him off for a change is take that mouth guard, rip it out of his damn mouth, and throw it away. Now, I apparently found out early this morning, and apparently Elliot Friedman was the first to really talk about this publicly on his 32 Thoughts podcast with Jeff Merrick, that Chris Kreider should actually be thankful that mouth guard did not land in the crowd. Because apparently when he threw it and he chucked it in the air, and I think he meant to throw it in the crowd, apparently it hit the boards and it stayed on the ice, the mouth guard. It didn't clear the boards. It didn't get out of play. It didn't get into the crowd. Apparently, based on the NHL rule book, if Chris Kreider had thrown that mouth guard of Matthew Tkachuk out of play over the glass and into the crowd, he would have gotten a game misconduct last night. Yes.
Really?
Yes. And I don't think he knew the rule. I can be damn sure I didn't know that rule existed. But yes, it is in the rule book that throwing an object, apparently an object that's considered a piece of the player's equipment, away and into the crowd is a game misconduct. And the only reason it wasn't is because he missed getting it into the crowd. It hit the top of the glass and stayed on the ice. That's the thing that saved him from getting thrown out of the game. And the Rangers basically being down a forward for the rest of the game. Now, they still lost the game, obviously, but still crazy. I didn't even know it, Alex.
I didn't know that. Even if it was a 2-minute, minor for, delay a game or just unsportsmanlike conduct would have made it a gameless conduct. That's pretty harsh. And I'm wondering if that's got something to do with that. It's got to be something that's taken place prior. Maybe somebody threw a player's stick or something for that to have been a rule where automatically game misconduct. That's pretty interesting. So, yeah, good thing that didn't actually go into the stands. But that's crazy. Got to look at the rule book.
Yeah, no doubt. No, Steve, that was in the third period, that incident with Kreider and Tkachuk. So it wasn't at the end of the game. It was in the third period. So if that mouth guard had indeed landed out of play, it would have been a game misconduct on Chris Kreider. Pretty crazy that it ended up being that way. But my last thing I'll say about this, and then we'll turn our attention to Dallas-Edmonton tonight, is look, Kreider and Zibanejad have to be better. That was the biggest play that Tkachuk was right, actually. He said it. I think that's the best play he's made all game. It honestly was, pretty quiet, Chris Kreider. And Zibanejad, I credit Zibanejad, took responsibility defensively for one of the miscues he made last night during one of the Florida goals. So credit to him, but they need more from Mika as well. They've had pretty quiet series for the Rangers. Really, thanks to that. Really, you got to thank Gaudreau and Lafreniere quite a bit. In this series for the Rangers, even being 2-2 as far as anything offensively going into game five. And Panarin's another one, he's got to probably elevate his game a little bit as well for the New York Rangers. And those three are key. If they keep being stuck in the mud, that trio, Mika, Chris Kreider, and the bread man, Artemi Panarin, they're going to be in trouble in this series against the Florida Panthers. But it's been a great series, Alex. We need to take a step back for a moment and just say what a phenomenal series so far the Rangers-Panthers has been. It's been tight. Every game's been compelling. Every game's been a thrill ride. Every game has been a nail-biter right down to the end. Three of the four games have gone to overtime. Game one, I guess, is the one game that was kind of blah. Maybe you could say that. Game one was that one game. But ever since game one, this has been a tremendous series. The level of play has been off the charts. The animosity and physicality has been there. The goaltending's been exceptional on both sides, especially from Igor Shesterkin. It's been the series we all hoped for, and we've got at least minimum, Alex, two more games of it.
Yeah, it's a true title fight. I mean, like I said, these are evenly matched teams. They've been good all season long.
Who's going to be still standing after all the body blows, right? Right. Doesn't it exactly. Give that feel?
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing, game one was the feeling out process, and then game two, we saw things open up a bit more. Game three was the explosion. And now we're kind of seeing things settle down. And they said it's going to be who lands the hardest punch over the next 2 to 3 games. And like I said, it's been a lot of fun. And seeing these lower scoring battles, I said it on the BetCast last night. We see a bunch of 3-2 overtime games, ad nauseum during the season. And most of them are snooze fests. They're boring. They're dull. That has not been the case so far. And really most of the playoff games that have been low scoring this year. If we can even go back to the last 2 weeks of the regular season, we've seen some of the most exciting low scoring hockey we've seen since probably the turn of the century, in my opinion. And that's a good sign for the game because obviously the league has always tried to do as much as it could to increase scoring. And yes, you want high scoring games during the season. You want increased scoring overall. The scoring pace in this league is fine. But to have defense really stand up in these key moments and still be entertaining and exciting, that's a great sign of the product that's in front of us.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, there's a fallacy out there that if it's 2-1 or 3-2, it's got to be boring. It's got to be dull. There can't be a whole lot going on. This is the series that proves that wrong, debunks that theory. You can have absolutely phenomenal, scintillating, exciting, edge-of-your-seat hockey, even if it is 2-1, even if it is 3-2, the final score, and even if there aren't maybe as many goals as you would like to see. And this series proves that. It's been absolutely tremendous hockey. There's no question about that. And the fact we get at least two more games of it, probably good news for all hockey fans out there, no doubt. All right, one actually coaching note that I want to talk about briefly before the Dallas-Edmonton Game 4 preview, because we were on Monday. We didn't have a show yesterday, so this hire took place after Monday's show. Dan Bylsma, the head coach of the Seattle Kraken, he has been announced. announced as the new head coach of the Kraken. It's someone that's obviously won a cup in Pittsburgh. It's a guy that obviously had success there. He won the Jack Adams Award one year as well when he was with the Penguins. Didn't work as well for him in Buffalo. And I think he kind of had to, kind of rediscover what made him a pretty good coach, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, because it was a rotten experience, I think, for him and for the team in Buffalo there. It did not go well. And people were wondering, is, you know, Dan Bylsma, you know, lost his fastball, if you will, as far as NHL head coaching. But he went to the AHL. He got an opportunity there. He's coached Coachella Valley, the Firebirds, the farm team, the affiliate of the Kraken the last couple of years. And he's done a phenomenal job there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They go to the Calder Cup final last year. They lose in game 7. You know, they're basically that close when they lose to Hershey. They're back to the Western Conference final right now against the Milwaukee Admirals, which is about to begin. So he has done a great job down there in the American League. And this is a hire that I'm going to give not an overwhelming thumbs up to, but I'm going to give it a mild thumbs up because, you know, it's a guy with a lot of experience. It's a guy that knows the players that have been down there in Coachella Valley, and a lot of them have come up to the Seattle Kraken roster the last year or two. And I got to believe Shane Wright is going to make a case to be finally full-time in the NHL next season with the Seattle Kraken. And that's Dan Bylsma and Dan Bylsma's staff, Alex, down there in Coachella Valley that have worked with Shane Wright and have put him in a position. We saw Shane Wright at the end of the season, you know, for Seattle this year. He looked like a completely different player, a much better player. You know, you got to tip the cap to Dan Bylsma for that and the coaching staff down there, you know, at Coachella Valley. They've obviously done a nice job developing these players. Now, is the message going to translate and will the success translate at the NHL level? But I don't hate the hire. I don't. You know, you keep it in-house. He knows the players. He's had great success. He's probably deserving at this point of an opportunity again in the NHL with the great work he's done in the American Hockey League the last 2 years. So I'm okay with the hire at all, in spite of what a certain Mike Commodore might say. Now, I know Mike Commodore nailed it. Mike Commodore's talking about Scott Arneil. I got him mixed up. He was talking about Scott Arneil.
I was going to say, I'm like, damn, did he go after another coach?
No. I'm not thinking Scott Arneil. No, he didn't have any bad things to say, at least not yet, about Dan Bylsma. But that could always change. But, no, I like the hire. And the question now becomes, and you know, I'm all for it because I'm always one of these people where I don't care if it's man, woman, or alien, seriously, if they're qualified, if they're doing a hell of a job, they deserve the opportunity. And that's Jessica Campbell. She was on Dan Bylsma's staff in Coachella Valley. Apparently, from everything I've read, and I've read a lot of stuff about the work she's done there as an assistant coach the last couple of years in Coachella Valley, she's had a big time hand in the power play, and working on that, diagramming plays, set plays, especially to exploit certain teams' weaknesses. Like, she is dialed in as a hockey mind. There is no question about that. And to me, the opportunity is if anyone's going to get that first crack to make history and maybe be an assistant coach in the National Hockey League as a woman, she's earned it. And so I'm very fascinated to see. And apparently Dan Bylsma, when he had his introductory press conference with Seattle yesterday to announce the hire, Dan Bylsma left the door open to bring Jessica with him to the Seattle Kraken as his assistant, as she was at Coachella Valley with him. So that's going to be interesting to see. And I think it's time. It's not just time because, hey, to get a woman as an assistant coach in the National Hockey League, but it's because someone that's deserving, in my opinion, that's gotten the job done, that has the accolades, that has done the job at a very high level. It's not like someone that she's had this opportunity and she's flunked at it, you know, and she's failed at it. She's not done well, and the team's not done well. She has done well, and the team has done well as well when she was there. So fascinated to see. And like I said, it would be history-making if she is indeed the first assistant coach in the National Hockey League. But there's a definite chance that will happen. So like I said, Alex, for me, this is a thumbs-up hire because, look, Dan, you know, took his lumps in Buffalo when his last head coaching job in the NHL. He decided, you know what, I'm going to take the AHL opportunity, see if I can reinvent myself a little bit as a coach, learn from the mistakes, and great job there in Coachella Valley. Maybe he's ready to succeed again at the NHL level. But like I said, I think an opportunity that I can totally see why Seattle went in that direction. Alex, what do you think? Dan Bylsma, Seattle head coach.
Yeah, like I said, I like the move because it's an in-house hire. Now, if he had just been sitting around on a couch or on someone's studio and they hired him, I would not be a fan of this one bit. But the fact that, like I said, he's worked with these young guys and they've been successful. So to keep that continuity, and we've seen this with many teams over the years where they bring up the AHL guys, especially if they've had success. And sometimes it's worked out, sometimes it hasn't. I think obviously with a guy who has the veteran NHL pedigree that he does, this should be a fine fit. Like you said, a little bit of history attached to it because with Jessica Campbell, maybe we see her be the first woman to coach in the NHL. Maybe she ends up being the first AHL head coach as a woman potentially because obviously they got to fill that gap. So like you said, with the door being open, it'll be interesting to see that development as well, whether she becomes the first head coach in the A or the first assistant in the NHL. Like I said, if you're qualified to do the job, hell, there's at least 20 men I know who can't run a fucking power play in this league right now, and they still have jobs. So why not let a lady get a chance?
That's sure. True, yeah.
That's a really cool kind of twist to it. But like I said, I think Bylsma moving up and getting that new lease on life and working with the younger guys, maybe we see him, and we talk about this all the time with the recycling of coaches. Maybe we're seeing now where he's one of these guys who is, a little bit more ahead of the curve and is adapting to the newer changes and just the game as a whole. Some coaches grow and some don't. Some just stay set in their ways and it works for, 15, 20 years, but then at some point it changes as the game changes. So we'll get to really see if he's has adapted and made changes to his style and has a style that the younger guys can adapt to. The A is definitely a different league than the National. But, I don't think there's a, it's not a terrible hire by any means. I think it's a solid one. And with a full camp under their belt, we'll see how things progress for Seattle, a team that definitely did take a big step backward after taking a big step forward the year before. So, obviously, they've got a feeling, we're kind of trying to stay in lockstep with the future, and Bowles going to be the head of that.
One thing he said in the press conference yesterday, I'm looking for a high-energy hockey team, and that's the way I want my teams playing. If you watch Coachella Valley, they're a north-south team. They're an attacking-style team. He wants his players to make plays. He wants people that can create space with their speed. And also a blend of physicality as well. He used those two words, speed and physicality. That's what I want my teams to be. Make plays quickly, get on the bot, make plays quickly, get in on the forecheck quickly, and then hit the first thing you see. That's what he's looking for. And it's a little bit of a departure from what they did under Dave Hakstol. It is. Dave Hakstol was a little bit more, we got to be good in our own end, a little conservative sometimes. Sometimes a bit too much to their detriment. And as someone in our chat says, Dave, maybe Dan Bylsma can encourage the Kraken to shoot more than 20. That's another thing too. I mean, this is a style that should lend itself to generating more shots and shot attempts and all that. It's a north-south brand of hockey that Dan Bylsma already yesterday in his press conference was talking about. And I didn't even have to watch the press conference to know he wants to play that way, because I've been watching a lot of Coachella Valley the last 2 years. They're not a boring hockey team, I'll tell you that. Not at all.
And you have to in that Pacific Division, right? And that's going to be the interesting thing, too. We don't really talk about this much as far as kind of handicapping and dissecting coaches, but it's something I do kind of look at. When you've had a coach who's been with two or three different teams, but they're all in the Eastern Conference, they're all in the Western Conference, they're all in the same division. And, we always talk about that. Conferences have their styles. Some teams can adapt better than others. But we know the more rough and tumble, the more defensive responsible hockey is played in the Eastern Conference, the more kind of open ice, more offensive creativity we see in the Western Conference. So for him to already just kind of acknowledge and say that and adapt to that, like I said, that's, of course, dealing with the time of being in the AHL specific division where they hardly travel. They just all play each other and literally cannibalize one another for about 70 games. That's a good sign that he's, once again, he's adapting, he's making that change and making that move. Okay, this is the style we have to play to beat an Edmonton in the regular season, to beat a Vancouver or Vegas, these teams that can run and gun you to death on a given night in the season. He's preparing for that.
Yeah, there's no question. There's so many questions, too, about, I believe he is still going to coach the team for the rest of the AHL playoffs. I think so. I have not heard that. I don't think that. I think Seattle would let him finish out the playoff run.
I mean, yeah, why not?
The Firebirds. I can't see this. Oh, he's hired for Seattle. That means the rest of the playoff run for Coachella Valley, he's not going to be behind the bench. No, I think he'll be there still. I think they'll let him finish, especially because it's their own, you know, it's their own affiliate. You know, he'll let them finish out the playoff run with Coachella Valley, and then obviously the transition will happen after the end of the Calder Cup playoffs, whenever that is for the Firebirds, who are, again, about to start with the Milwaukee Admirals in the conference final.
And when you look at Seattle, I mean, it's not like they're going to make a lot of wholesale changes. Most of their additions would probably come with guys, like you said, like Shane Wright being a full-time player. There's probably going to be guys who end up getting called up who are big pieces for Coachella Valley these last two seasons that fill in the gaps and holes in Seattle. So you're essentially just doing extended scouting. And if you don't have to, obviously you draft, you maybe sign a few free agents here or there, but you pretty much have the nucleus of your camp already ready to roll moving forward. So, I mean, if you're talking about a team that's literally comprised of some players that are coming off a potential Calder Cup championship win and two conference title runs, you know, you're already in a catbird seat in that spot right now, where you don't have to make any kind of, you know, drastic decisions. You wouldn't have to worry about him, you know, being absent-minded from the big club because everything's kind of tied together because he's been there for the last 2 years.
I already see a bunch of names on that Coachella Valley roster that have been there for the 2 years. Shane Wright's among them up front. There's a couple, too. There's Ryan Winterton. He's, you know, knocking on the door of an NHL chance. Cole Lind. Max McCormick, who I believe is also the captain of the team. You know, he was with Ottawa and played in the NHL with Ottawa Senators years ago. He'd be a candidate if he has a good training camp. On the defense, I think Riker Evans, he's very close to being full-time blue liner for the Seattle Kraken. He's on Coachella Valley right now. There's so many candidates right now that are Cale Fleury as well on that blue line for Coachella Valley. So, like I say, there are already, I just see it when I look at the roster, just a ton of candidates that jump off the page at you as far as guys that are, I think are going to be maybe part of that Kraken team and roster next year, especially if they have a good training camp. So interesting to see how that goes. But Dan Bylsma, the new head coach of the Seattle Kraken. All right, it's game four, Western Conference Final here tonight. We're looking forward to the BetCast for it as well. It is Dallas, Edmonton, Stars leading the series 2-1. We have the Edmonton Oilers, though, -135 home favorites here in game four. The total 6. Believe it or not, shaded to the under. So we've seen a little adjustment in the total here for game four. When you look at this game, look, it's really staggering that 2 games in a row, I think the headline, you know, story for me to begin my analysis of game four tonight is how can one team play so well in the first period in game two, so well in the first period in game three, and then look like a completely different team in the second period? And there's a lot of people blaming Edmonton for that, saying, what's going on in the first intermission of game two after that great first period? What's going on in the first intermission of game three after that great Edmonton first period? Back-to-back great first periods for the Oilers in this series. What goes on to go from that start to just completely getting thumped and dominated in the second period, the likes of Edmonton getting, you know, game two is not quite the domination in the second period, but it was still Dallas controlled the second period of game two. Game three, it was total Dallas domination in the second period. I think the shots were like 12-0 for Dallas at one point in the second period of game three, turning that 2-0 deficit after the first period into a 3-2 lead. It was an absolutely outstanding game for Jason Robertson. He saw the tweet clearly that, hey, he's got to be much harder to play against. And then the next thing you know, he's getting a hat trick. And it's funny, and it's not at all a fallacy or a coincidence to say that Roope Hintz being back doesn't help Jason Robertson. It sure does. He makes a huge difference. And even Jason Robertson said that. He gets the puck in areas where I can just shoot it. He finds those areas. And sure enough, he was able to do that in game three, getting the hat trick. It was a brilliant piece of work, but there's just so many issues for Edmonton. You know what I'm finding out too about Edmonton, and the second period proved this when Dallas was just all over them, just in the offensive zone, it felt like, for the whole period. Certainly the first half of the second period, they were all over Edmonton. You cycle the puck and get the puck below the goal line against Edmonton's defense, they don't know what the fuck they're doing sometimes. Like, they lose coverage. The communication breaks down. Oh, I thought you had that guy. No, you were supposed to have him. You know, those are the kind of issues we start to see. When you get that puck moving around and cycle game starts to unfold, Edmonton's blue line can just fall apart and crumble. And unfortunately for Chris Knobloch, he made the ill-fated decision to reunite Cody Ceci and Darnell Nurse on the blue line in game three. They were abysmal. They were absolutely awful in that game together. And the Oiler fans are screaming, you know, now after that game, how the hell could you put those two guys together again? Because they've actually played pretty poorly many times playing in the same defensive pair earlier in the playoffs as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens tonight. I'm looking at the defense pairs for game four tonight. And I'm still seeing them paired together again, Nurse and Ceci. So no adjustment, at least in the blue line pairs, it looks like, for Knobloch. He's going to keep Ekholm and Bouchard together, Nurse with Ceci. And it looks like Kulak and Broberg, Philip Broberg, the young kid, is going to draw in. And Vincent Desharnais is going to be a healthy scratch tonight on the blue line for Edmonton. We'll see if that can make a difference. Philip Broberg does give them some degree of physicality, but more so a puck moving presence, and I think that's what they're looking for after getting hemmed in by Dallas after the first period of game four. But I'm a little surprised he didn't separate Nurse and Ceci. I really am. And look, the thing about Dallas is you got to play 60 minutes against them, and that is something that the Edmonton Oilers, you know, they're gonna have to figure out. Now look, other than that brutal second period, you know, Edmonton didn't play that bad, but the second was so bad it cost them the game, essentially, you know, and it gave all the life to Dallas. And then Skinner, who had a great game in, you know, game one, you know, pretty good in game two, even in a losing effort, you know, did nothing wrong in game three. The three goals that Dallas scored, the first three, were tough to blame him. I mean, one of the goals, the second goal that Robertson scored, there are four Edmonton players just standing still next to their goaltender doing nothing, checking hot air. You know, you can't blame Stuart Skinner for that. And I do blame the coach too, Real Deal Prime, for not calling a timeout. I said that. He should have called a timeout when it was 2-2. Stop the bleeding. Settle the game down. He didn't do that, Chris Knobloch. Maybe a little NHL head coaching experience in a big playoff spot showing up there a little bit. But then that goal in the won the game, the game-winning goal from Robertson in the third period. I mean, Skinner's got to hug the post. He's got to maintain that post. He can't, you know, move off it like he did. And it's what allowed Robertson to find the opening, you know, to beat Skinner there. And bank it in off him. And that ended up being the game winner. Miro puts it away with just a perfect empty net goal, which also cashed Alex's bargain bin, of course, in game three. But it was just a terrible loss for Edmonton, given the great, they couldn't have played a better first 20 minutes. So the thing for Edmonton is they're going to want to duplicate and replicate the first period that they have had the last two games without the second period, you know, whether it's not fall asleep at the wheel totally. That's disrespectful to Dallas, saying that it's all, oh, Edmonton just fell asleep and let Dallas back into the game. No, Dallas doesn't quit. Dallas doesn't give up. Dallas is the best team in the Western Conference this season, and they don't panic. They don't flinch. They have shown it over and over again. They up their level of play, and I still maintain it that if Dallas plays at the kind of level we saw in the second period, they're better than Edmonton. And they're going to beat Edmonton again tonight. And in this series, they're going to win. It's that simple. I don't think Edmonton's best game can match Dallas's best game when Dallas plays their best. And we saw that in the second period. Edmonton couldn't deal with it. Edmonton couldn't hang. Edmonton could not figure it out in that second period. So this is one of those games where Edmonton early makes sense. We've seen a pattern of behavior develop where Edmonton has had good first periods. And in a spot like this, where the Edmonton Oilers cannot afford a 3-1 hole in this series, you would definitely expect the Edmonton Oilers to have a good start again. So we're going to go back to the well with the Edmonton first period to score a goal. I'm definitely going to look in that direction. I don't think I'm going to touch the first period puck line here because I'm also hearing from Dallas that, and Robertson said it after the game, we do want to eventually get our asses in gear in the first period. Like, we can't keep doing this either, having these bad first periods and then getting our game going. So I would expect a little more pushback and a little bit, I don't expect 13-2 or whatever it was, shots on goal for Edmonton in the first period tonight, like we saw in game three. I would expect Dallas to be a little bit more on their toes here tonight in game four in the first period. That being said, I still do like the Edmonton Oilers to get on the board in the first period. It's minus 160. You got to lay a little price, but we've been cashing a lot of these, so I don't mind laying the juice on the minus 160 for Edmonton to score. And I know in game four, we talked about this on Monday, I thought that game three Rangers-Panthers was the over spot. It's got a good chance to go back to lower scoring, tighter hockey in game four, and that's exactly what we saw. I don't know if that's the case here, though, because if you actually look at it, we've said it all along. Edmonton's been a higher scoring team at home. Dallas averages more goals on the road. If you look at the series history with Edmonton versus Dallas here at Rogers Place in Edmonton, more overs than unders. They've been higher scoring games going back to the regular season. So I'm not sure we're going to see that jump right back to an under after that game three over like we saw in the Rangers-Panthers series. I think we could see more goals once again here tonight. So I am going to be on the over bifecta here, 1.5 and 5. And now shop around because 6 is the prevailing number, but there are still some 5.5s out there at a few books. There's over 5.5 minus 120 at Pinnacle, over 5.5 minus 124 at FanDuel. So make sure you shop around. You will find some 5.5s out there. So I am back to the over bifecta here. I don't think this is going to quite be that we just jump back to under like we did in game four of the Rangers-Panthers series. To me, Ottinger's been good, but he's not been phenomenal. And then you've got Skinner on the other end, who's, again, he's had some great moments and he's had some absolutely terrible moments. So it's not quite the goaltending situation we've got in the other series where it seems like Bobrovsky and especially Shesterkin, you know, you need to fucking shoot it with a rifle at this point, you know, to beat either of those goalies. So I do think we could still see some more goals here tonight in game four with the over bifecta, with Edmonton to score in the first, which I like. But I'm taking, for as far as money line goes, Dallas plus 115. I mean, I am not going against a team that's 6-1 on the road in the playoffs as an underdog. That's just not happening. And in fact, I read a stat too. Dallas Stars, their last six games when priced as underdogs, do you know what their record is? 6-0. Pretty good. 6-0 the last six tries for the Dallas Stars when they've been an underdog. And guess what? They're an underdog here tonight in game four. So you got a 6-0 and 6-1 angle, combined 12-1 angles supporting Dallas here. They're 6-0 in their last six as a dog. They're 6-1 on the road here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they're getting plus 115. And there's been Edmonton money, but I kind of expected Edmonton money. It's a must-have spot, just like with Florida last night. But we've seen also Dallas win game three and game four on the road against Vegas in the first round, game three and game four on the road in the second round against Colorado. Don't put it past this Dallas team to take two on the road again, back to back. They're capable of it, especially if Edmonton is going to have trouble. If Dallas brings their A game more often than they did in game three, you know, Edmonton can't match it. I'm convinced of it. So, yeah, Dallas for me at plus 115. I do want to mention the one lineup change we are seeing for Dallas. I didn't think Peter DeBoer would have the heart in him to make this change, but Craig Smith is a healthy scratch. He is out, and Radek Foxa draws back in on that fourth line for the Dallas Stars tonight. And look, it was time. I know he's been physical at times, but he's had a million chances. Can't put a puck in the ocean right now, Craig Smith. There's been some times when he's had to make a nice, easy, crisp tape-to-tape pass, and he's put the puck way behind his line mate, missed pass, turnover, goes the other way. It's been more rough than good stuff from Craig Smith here in the playoffs for Dallas. Otherwise, for a team that's been just, you know, firing for the most part on all cylinders here in the playoffs. But I like the switch by Peter DeBoer. And Radek Foxa is a great two-way player. He can chip in some offense. Don't forget, Radek Foxa scored the game-winning goal. Game seven in the third period against Vegas in the first round. He got what was the game-winning goal in that series. So I like the move with Smith out, Foxa in on the fourth line, and pretty much everything else stays status quo here tonight for Dallas as far as the lineup. Alex, what do you think here? West Final, Game 4, Dallas-Edmonton.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Game 3 was just an absolute dream for me personally, just as far as betting goes. So now, being in the spot that I'm in where I need an Edmonton win to get the stack rolling in this series, I'm not betting Dallas pregame. There's no reason for me to do it. I can wait, and like you said, if everything's going according to the same pattern, I'll have time in the second period to bet on Dallas, which most of us have had time to do in the previous couple of games. And you ask yourself, so what's happening in that locker room with Edmonton in the first intermission? I think it's more of maybe what's not happening and what's not being said in that locker room. And, you know, I talked about as great of a job as Chris Knobloch has done, and definitely he's seems to be one of the on his way to being one of the elite coaches in this league. But also, maybe, you know, he's not saying a whole lot in that room. You know, they're kind of resting on their laurels of, we had this good first period, let's just keep the momentum going. And then all of a sudden we're seeing the same old Edmonton. You know, this is an Edmonton team that we've seen them plenty of times come out hot and say, oh, you know, here are the Oilers, and here's, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl and this, you know, core group and all this depth. And then all of a sudden they just revert back to, oh, where's McDavid? Where's Draisaitl? Why is no one scoring? Where are the saves that Stuart Skinner were making the first period? Why is he not making those saves now in the second and third? So you add that into the fact that Pete DeBoer, veteran coach who's been here time and time again, he makes a lot of good moves and good transitions and, you know, changing on the fly in the game, changing the series. Like I said, finally scratching Craig Smith, something he could have easily done three or four games ago, but certainly here in this point now, making those adjustments. And I think the coaching edge definitely is on the side of Dallas. And that's the thing you look at now this time of year. We won't talk about coaching edges too often in the regular season. They rear their head now, especially late into the playoffs, when you have to make those tough decisions, when you have to shift guys in the lineup and, you know, maybe take somebody out who you feel has been playing hard, playing well, you know, to a certain standard, but just not finishing and not converting. This is a production business. You have to finish. So that's the biggest key here. And so in saying that, it wouldn't shock me one bit if we see Edmonton come out hot and then they lay an egg the rest of the way. Dallas, you know, skates home with a 3-1 series lead. At the same time, we've also seen from Dallas every now and then where they get on a little roll and play some good hockey. Then all of a sudden, when you least expect it, they just lay an absolute egg. And that's the thing I worry about here with Dallas. Dallas is kind of a team that really can build themselves up and then all of a sudden just fall flat. And even if it's just one night, but then they have that flat game, that flat kind of setup, as I think Ian's computer froze again or something. But you have that kind of a flat energy sometimes from Dallas. And that's something they really have to try to avoid. And that's the key with them in the first period. But I do like the first period over 1.5, minus $1.10. I'm leaning on possibly having both teams to score, but I don't like that as much. And I don't like the over 6. But anything, I would lay the price with a 5.5. So like Ian was saying earlier, definitely shop around for that. But this is definitely one of those spots where I think Dallas has to try to match or top the intensity of Edmonton in the first period to avoid having that complacent kind of start. If you go down 2-0 against Edmonton in this game like you did in game 3, that comeback slot may not necessarily be open there. That comeback window may be a little bit tighter than it was in game 3, if it's even open at all. So I think Dallas, it's going to be important for them to get on the board early, not let Edmonton dominate the pace in the first 20 minutes. And then as things move along, it, like I said, you make those adjustments after the first period, and that may be the time to start looking at anything side or total related for the full game. So it'll be an in-game kind of a thing for anything after the first period, but I will be on that first period over 1.5. I see a minus $1.10 at Bet Online.
All right, over 1.5 first period here for Alex with game 4 tonight, Edmonton-Dallas. And again, we have our bet cast tonight, so it's okay to lay low as far as any pregame positions are concerned, and we'll definitely be getting involved tonight as far as the bet cast is concerned with some live action during game 4 of the Stars and Oilers tonight. As far as props go, I also want to mention the other change. I only mentioned the defensive change that Edmonton made. There's two changes up front for the Oilers. Sam Carrick is out. Warren Fogle is out. Man, I don't know if that's warranted. To me, this is This is the part of tonight's game that worries me about Edmonton. This feels like a little bit of a bizarre, odd move by Chris Knobloch. I think there's been more quiet, non-existent performers up front for the Oilers than Warren Fogle so far in this series. And yet he's the one that's out tonight, along with Sam Carroll. Sam Carrick's only on the fourth line, but Corey Perry is back in the lineup here tonight for Edmonton, along with the other guy that's back in is Ryan McLeod, who I thought it was a good decision to put Ryan McLeod out, because Ryan McLeod's really been quiet for the Oilers. But Ryan McLeod's back. This speaks to what Knobloch did with the goaltending in the Vancouver series. He's a forgiving man. He's the king of second chances. That's what he is. He is not someone that is going to staple someone to the bench indefinitely. If he feels they're struggling, there's a chance he's going to put them back in, and especially off a loss, he feels he's got that opportunity now to put Ryan McLeod back in, give him a chance to make amends, put Corey Perry back in, give him a chance to make amends here tonight. So again, we'll see if it works. But again, Corey Perry's had very little impact, you know, on these playoffs. Pretty disappointing, actually, considering I think Edmonton thought, even though, look, he's older, he's going to be 40 soon, you know, they thought they were going to get a little more punch from Corey Perry here in the postseason than what they've gotten. They haven't, but he's back in tonight along with Ryan McLeod. And again, this speaks volumes about what Knobloch's coaching style is like, Alex. He's very forgiving. He's willing to give players a second chance and quickly, like one game out and then they're back in, like with Ryan McLeod. And now Perry's going to get another chance, just like with Skinner and with Pickard. You know, Pickard played those two games. He played well. He won the first game. He lost the second, but he played well in the loss in the second game. But Knobloch's forgiving. He said, Skinner's still our guy. We're putting him in game six against Vancouver. And sure enough, they won that. They won the series. So this is just Chris Knobloch. We're finding out personality-wise a little bit what he's all about. A guy could screw up. Guy could not be playing well. And he's not going to banish them for life. You know, he's going to give him another chance, and it looks like he's going to do that with both Perry and McLeod here tonight.
Yeah, and that's a good characteristic to have. Now, obviously, I don't know if that was necessarily the case with Skinner over Pickard. I think at that point, it's just you go with the better option. It's not necessarily so much giving him a second chance. It's just that you did what you had to do there. But, yeah, but obviously, you know, it's Perry, a veteran player. Both of you guys, veteran players, gritty players, too, and they know that, you know, we talk about how this series progresses. This is now the time where, like you said, the body blows start to add up. So if you get those more physical players, you get those guys that can get under people's skins, you know, get a Corey Perry to get in front of, you know, rattle Jake Oettinger, maybe bump him around a little bit. That's the kind of shit you need from Edmonton, because, you know, McDavid highlight reel goals, they ain't happening. All right? You're not getting four McDavid highlight reel goals. You're not getting three Draisaitl highlight reel goals to win this game. No, you're getting Zach Hyman right in front. You're getting Corey Perry right in front. It's the dirty garbage. It's cleaning up the shit in the crease and getting into the back of the net. That's how you're going to win against Dallas this game and in this series. So you get the guys that can do that.
Yeah, there's no question. And like I said, I definitely think that's what Perry's job has to be tonight. Corey Perry has to be an irritant start to finish
a
for
bitch.
Jake Ott.
He's got to be a bitch.
Yeah. There's no doubt. He's got to be just an irritant. He's got to really try to shake this guy. And it's not easy. Jake Oettinger's a cool, cute customer. There's no question about it. I mean, there's very little, I think, that gets him bothered. He's very even keel. He's been that way his whole career. There's no question. But, you know, I look at this and I see that, you know, this is an opportunity for Perry scores. It's a bonus. But Perry's there to ratchet up some emotion. Get in the grill of Oettinger, try to at least throw off a goaltender that is capable of playing great. And again, another phenomenal third period. What else is new from Jake Oettinger in game three? How good has that guy been in the third period, you know, throughout these playoffs? It's been something. So that's what you got to do. You got to make life difficult and uncomfortable. There's no question. If you're Ryan McLeod, you got to make more of an impact too, whether it's taking the body, whether it's getting in on the forecheck. Way too passive from Ryan McLeod the last time he was in the lineup for Edmonton. That's why he got taken out to begin with. So we'll see if the lineups changes work and light a spark for Edmonton. That's obviously the hope for Knobloch doing this with Broberg in on the blue line in place of Desharnais, who, by the way, had an atrocious shift on that second goal as well for Robertson. You know, he ended up, I think, plowing into his own goal. It was the Wyatt Johnston goal that made it 3-2. like plowed into his own goaltender, Desharnais. You know, took his own goaltender out of the play. There was zero chance for him to make a save on that. So it was just a terrible moment for him. And now he finds himself riding the pine here tonight for the Edmonton Oilers. So again, Broberg in on the blue line for the Edmonton Oilers in place of Desharnais. And then you've got Perry and McLeod in for the Oilers, Fogle and Carrick out for the Oilers. And the only change for Dallas is, again, Craig Smith out, Radek Foxa in, which I like that move for Dallas. So excited to see you. Great game. These are why we watch. I mean, I'm intrigued. Can Edmonton respond? Can they play 60 strong minutes? We'll have to wait and see. But as far as props go, just for this game here tonight, for Dallas, you know what it's like with those great goal scorers, right? And Jason Robertson now is his right-hand man. Roope hints back. Sure enough, with him back, what do we see? A hat trick. He's not going to get a hat trick every game, but now's the time. Like, if he's going to go on a heater scoring goals, and he could now because he's got that in him, especially with Roope hints back, get on these prices with Jason Robertson to score now before they get worse. Because if he ends up scoring tonight again, and maybe even two goals, he ain't going to be plus 270 at FanDuel to score a goal in the next game. I can tell you that right now. So plus 270 for Jason Robertson tonight. I like it. You know, he finally got things going. You know, Marchment at plus 420, I like at FanDuel because I thought he had chances the other night as well. Just the puck didn't go in. Seguin continues to be great. You know what's amazing about Seguin? We thought this guy was just an offensive player, finesse player, kind of soft at times, not really responsible defensively. I actually think that's what Seguin's been most of his career. You can't say that now. You can't say that this year, at least, in this playoff run. I'm seeing this guy back check. I'm seeing this guy kill plays. I'm seeing him help out his defense. I'm seeing him win all kinds of puck battles, one-on-one, all over the ice right now for the Dallas Stars. That is a shout-out to Tyler Seguin. He looks like a completely different, both ends of the ice, 200-foot hockey player right now. And I don't know who got it into him and made this change, because a few years ago, he looked like a shell of what we're seeing right now. But credit to him for making the change, committing to becoming better and more complete. And this is the best I've seen Tyler Seguin in years, Alex. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. The veterans have to step up. You know, we've called these guys out year after year during the regular season and postseasons. And now that
remember that CEO for Dallas did a few years ago, Jimmy Lights. Yeah. And he just railed on Ben and Seguin just out of the blue, just ripped them publicly. Yeah. As well.
Yeah.
Like, it was and bonus and sometimes still there.
Yep. And you need that. Sometimes everybody needs a little kick in the ass every now and then, and they got it. And now that message is being sent. And the fact that you have those guys playing well now in front of those younger guys like the Wyatt Johnsons and Logan Stankovens, you're building that winning culture. So that's the key piece as well. You're showing the next generation of stars how it's going to be done.
No doubt. And you know what's funny is that Peter DeBoer has done a great coaching tactical adjustments. You said that about DeBoer, Alex, and they said it on the broadcast too. He adjusted in the game three after the first period where they got Dallas basically the wingers just fly in the zone when they get the puck in the D zone, Dallas, and they're getting in on the forecheck. They're beating Edmonton in on the forecheck, and then they're getting the puck rolling around on the cycle, and they're just making Edmonton into a turnstile defensively. And that's how they scored so many of their goals in that second period, which ended up completely turning around game three in their favor. So an adjustment in terms of how they attack when they get the puck, Dallas. DeBoer made it going into the second period, and Edmonton couldn't figure it out. This is a huge game for Knobloch. You know, you're a young coach. It's your very first stint in the NHL this year. Dallas made their adjustments. Peter DeBoer made his adjustments. What do you got for a counter tonight? He's going to try to make these little adjustments, put the old man in there, Corey Perry, and, you know, and McLeod after some bad games, and he's going to hope that's a counter. How are they going to counter what Dallas is doing now in terms of that forechecking, tenacious forecheck, which they couldn't handle? You know, fly in the zone so that they could beat Edmonton to the loose pucks and the forecheck in the O zone, and then just turn him into a corkscrew in their own end, and they couldn't figure it out, and especially CeCe and Nurse, who were brutal. That's the one thing I'm very worried about Knobloch's adjustments here, Alex, that he's keeping CeCe and Nurse together. That's a concern because Dallas made fools out of those two guys in the last game. They did. It was that bad for that pair.
Yeah.
It was.
And maybe that'll be something we see, you know, like I said, if you're going to make adjustments, maybe if you see that they're getting cooked in the first 20 minutes, you split those two guys up and you shuffle things around with your six on the blue line.
I think it's because he's reluctant to separate and split up Ekholm and Bouchard because they've been so good for much of the playoffs. I think that's part of it, but you might have to. You might have to give some kind of different look. If you're getting, if these guys are getting their brains beat in again, Nurse and CeCe as a D pair tonight, and they just cannot handle that Dallas forecheck, you're going to keep, you know, seeing this game and this series slip away from you and not do anything about it. You got to adjust at some point if they're going to. But again, I think he's going to give them a chance early, see how they play as a pair again, if they can bounce back. Because Nurse especially, he's feeling a lot of heat right now locally with the media there. But again, if it starts to go south for that D pair, you have to put Ekholm and CeCe together, Ekholm and Nurse, but you got to do something to split it up. And I know you're reluctant, and the reluctancy is because Ekholm and Bouchard has been a phenomenal pair for you here in these playoffs, but you got to do something if it's going to go south again.
Okay, but and that's the thing. Make those adjustments. If you'll have time and moments in the game where you can put Bouchard and Ekholm out there, but two pieces of wood don't make a table. So if Nurse and CeCe, like I said, they're playing like shit, split them up. You have two quality defensemen you can pair them with to at least make the pair itself seem a little bit better overall. So that's something that, like I said, that's probably the biggest glaring hole right now for Edmonton heading into this contest.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah, Rich H., it's true. I mean, look, Father Time, we're all going to answer to Father Time
undefeated.
At some point.
Undefeated.
And maybe this is that year where finally for Corey Perry, it's like, well, you know what? The clock is close to striking midnight for him for a tremendous career, but there's just not a whole lot left. Maybe that's the case. We'll find out some tonight because, like, the one thing for Perry is now he's been sitting for a bunch of games and for given his age, obviously, and the rest, you know, he should be fresh for whatever he's got in the tank. He should be fresh tonight because he hasn't played in some time. So it's going to be interesting to see what the veteran Corey Perry delivers here tonight for the Edmonton Oilers in this game tonight. So I mentioned those props for Dallas. Like I said, Haskinen, you mentioned that. He's plus 500 if you think he's going to score again. But for Edmonton, here are the ones I'm going to look at. I still think the value with Nugent Hopkins is too good to ignore, plus 350 as long as he stays with McDavid. I also think it's a Leon night. Leon's had chances, you know, it's plus 135 for him to score. I'm going to go with Draisaitl. You know, it's very rare that he goes more than, what is it now? Three games without a point. So I could see him contributing in as well for the Edmonton Oilers. You could maybe take a shot with Perry potentially to score, but I prefer, if I'm going to take a shot with one of the guys re-entering the lineup for Edmonton, it would be McLeod, because McLeod's on the third line. He's going to get a little more ice time. And again, I think the price even on McLeod is a little bit better than it is for Perry, because McLeod's plus 750, you know, to score a goal tonight. That is one heck of a price. And I'm going to do the same thing for Dallas. You know, I'm going to sprinkle on Radek Foxa here tonight. Don't forget, Radek Foxa scored the game series-winning goal in Game 7 against Vegas, third period of the first round. So sometimes when you get that bump back into the lineup, you're flying a little bit out there. You're happy to be back, and you want to do everything to stay in the lineup. And sometimes that includes trying to make it happen offensively. So, you know, taking a shot with Radek Foxa tonight, not a bad look. And you're right, I think as long as Edmonton's the home team, you will see them start to get a few more power plays. We saw signs of that in Game 3. The Edmonton power play struggling, though. It's one for its last 15, Alex, if you can believe it. One for 15 slide for the Edmonton power play. To be honest, neither power play has been all that good in this series. Dallas's power play has struggled. Edmonton's penalty kill has, I think, killed off like 22 or 23 in a row going into tonight. So the Edmonton penalty kill has been incredible. It's, believe it or not, their power play that isn't getting things going right now. Just one for 15 with the man advantage entering tonight. So we'll see if they can get it going tonight in Game 4. But again, Dallas has not made it easy on them, and neither is, of course, Jake Oettinger. All right, great stuff. We're looking forward to this game tonight, Game 4, with the Stars and the Oilers. We're looking forward to our BetCast here tonight as well. Make sure you join us at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Game 4 tonight. with the Stars and Oilers, and it's a free betcast. So just tune in and join us right here on the Ice Guys YouTube channel. And again, if you want to join us on the betcast tonight, DM or email me or Alex for a spot on the betcast, and we will send you the link for it before it begins. Don't forget, though, we will have some more Patreon-exclusive live betcasts later in the Stanley Cup final round. And for those, you must be a Patreon member, so make sure you sign up for that. $10 per month, patreon.com/iceguys. You get, of course, our daily sides, totals, and player props posted each day, goalie charts, totals charts, access to our off-season bonus content, and, of course, access to our future exclusive, Patreon-exclusive live betcast. So, again, make sure you check that out. As well, and sign up $10 per month, patreon.com/iceguys, and check out the Ice Guys store as well. Get your gear and your merch, iceguys.myspreadshop.com.
Yeah, everything fully in stock right now over at the Ice Guys store. Yesterday was that 25% off promo. So we'll have promos coming up soon as we get into the new months. So keep on checking for that. That's over at iceguys.myspreadshop.com.
Absolutely. Check out the Ice Guys store. All right, we got our bargain bin special of the night and best bets coming up right after we hear from our great sponsors. Boston Hemp Inc., check them out. Get 20% off all orders on the website using the promo code ICEGUYS at bostonhempinc.com. All right, bargain bin special of the night. Not his fault totally. Evan Rodriguez, he did let us down, but not for lack of trying. He did have chances again. He got robbed on a partial breakaway by Shesterkin. I still like the call. He had chances. Not always going to get there, but a bargain bin special of the night here for Edmonton-Dallas. Game 4 tonight. Alex, what do you like in the bargain bin?
Yeah, we're going to go to Wyatt Johnston, and I like him to get two or more points at plus 420. That's available at FanDuel. I think he's going to be able to play a big role here, and it may not be a goal, maybe a couple assists, but we'll get it covered either way if he just gets two or more points. Plus 420 for Wyatt Johnston and the Dallas Stars here in Game 4 against Edmonton.
All right, there it is. I like it. Wyatt Johnston, great price, plus 425 for Wyatt, over 1.5 points for Alex B. Smith with his bargain bin special of the night. This is definitely more of a longer shot. He's not obviously a consistent offensive performer for the Dallas Stars, but back in the lineup, fourth line, I think he's been good on the forecheck. I think he's an upgrade from Craig Smith. He got the game winner in Game 7 against Vegas, the series winner as well in that Game 7 against the Golden Knights in the first round. I'm going with Radek Foxa back in the lineup and back on the scoreboard too, I think, tonight for the Dallas Stars. Plus 750 at FanDuel for Radek Foxa tonight for my bargain bin special of the night. All right, best bets for Game 4 tonight, Stars Oilers. Alex, what do you like for best bet?
It's worked in, what, four of the last five nights. Didn't work last night, but once for lack of trying. We were going the first period over here, minus $1.10 with Dallas and Edmonton. Edmonton's been getting off the hot starts the last couple of games. Dallas needs to do so, in my opinion, especially if they want to win this game and take a stranglehold in this series. So 20 minutes will be imperative for both clubs. I do think we see goals, at least two of them. So give me the first period over with Stars Oilers. That is my best bet.
All right, Stars Oilers first period over. Best bet for Alex B. Smith. Full game over. Best bet for yours truly. We're going to go back to the well. We cashed the best bet on Monday with the over in this game. I don't think this is going to be the same situation as game four with Rangers-Panthers, where it goes right back to under here tonight. I do think we'll see Edmonton pump things up offensively. And I definitely think Dallas can chip in as well. Total 5.5 at FanDuel. We'll go with that. So Dallas-Edmonton over 5.5 minus 124 for my best bet here. For game four, Dallas-Edmonton here tonight. All right, shout out to everyone in the chat. Hit the like button. BetCast tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Looking forward to it. A reminder, the Ice Guys is live 7 days a week, Monday to Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern, Saturday and Sunday, noon Eastern. If you can't watch the show live, download the Ice Guys podcast in audio form on all major podcast platforms and on True TV Plus. Download the app to check out the show there. Roku, Amazon, and Apple devices. For Alex B. Smith, I'm Ian Cameron. Have a great Wednesday night. We'll see you for the BetCast tonight right here on the Ice Guys.